Okay, folks, it's time for a holiday special edition of Fanacheck. Or should I say, Santacheck. I'm joined by a regular guest today. We're going to explore one of our favorite holiday movies, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. So sit back, get some eggnog, and enjoy. All right, the holiday episode of Fanacheck. But I'm not Fanacheck today, sir. I am Santacheck.
Santacheck.
Where's your hat?
That's the best I could come up with.
You Santa smell like beef and cheese.
I'm sorry?
You smell like beef of cheese and you smell like Lord of Lies.
We just watched that.
Yeah.
That's Elf, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We just watched that. That's one of my favorites. We're going to talk about some favorite holiday movies. But yeah, there's been Fanacheck. There's been Solocheck. So I'll be Santacheck today. But thank you for joining me. Did you come up with a name for today? I don't even think I asked you to do that. Do you have I did.
I am today. I'm going to be Chaz Reinhold, the great Chaz Reinhold from Wedding Crashers fame. Ma the Meatloaf.
Oh, wow.
The legend.
Chaz Reinhold. Excellent. That's a great
scene. I've been crashing funerals lately. Yeah. Chicks are super horny.
I actually just showed that scene to my oldest daughter. Just him screaming about the meatloaf, because I do that around the house a lot. Like, I'll scream that, and like, just to give her the frame of reference, I showed her that. But that's funny. Well, so there's a couple things I wanted to accomplish right off the bat, and we're gonna kill a couple birds with one stone here, because one thing I want to do is I wanted you to kind of just give a plug for your podcast. But then there's another topic I want to talk about, which you just discussed on your podcast. So we'll just open with all that. So why don't you just take the opportunity there, Chaz, and tell us about your podcast, where we can find you.
Our podcast is called Fold in the Cheese, Your Recipe for Fantasy Football Success. It is a fantasy football podcast, if you couldn't tell by the name. And it is mostly nonsense. It is on all the podcast stores, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all that. I've been doing it for about a year and a half, almost 2 years now, with a good friend of mine from college. And we talk about fantasy football in a very non-threatening way, in a very we know slightly more than the average person kind of way.
Yeah, it's very approachable. I like it a lot. And you guys always do some movie trivia in there too.
We do movie trivia, some pop culture references. We like to keep it light, for sure.
I like it. Well, so your episode this past week, this Thursday, you guys talked about something that I wanted to talk about. So let's just jump into it. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
I, sir, don't subscribe to that hypothesis. I don't like that line of thinking. But are you on board with the Die Hard as a Christmas movie idea?
I'm not fully on board with it, actually. My co-host Ethan was a diehard fan, and he made all of the points that it was a Christmas movie when we described it as a Christmas movie. I could fall on either side of it. I would not necessarily call it a Christmas movie, because to me, a Christmas movie has got to have a certain Christmas spirit to it that is specific to Christmas. This movie happens to take place during Christmas. There are some Christmas jokes, whatever, a little bit of Christmas music. Like Run DMC Christmas music, and there's a Christmas party at the office.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, up until recently, I didn't even know that was a debate. I didn't even know people thought it was a Christmas movie. So
yeah, it's like what, last 5 years, maybe, all over the internet and social media. I don't like it at all. I'm okay with Die Hard. I think it's overrated as far as action movies go. But it's got its place in history for sure. But I don't see it as a holiday movie. And it actually, it kind of pisses me off when people talk about it as a holiday movie. But let me ask you this, because this is an argument I've been hearing lately. There are a lot of people, too, that don't really think Home Alone is a Christmas movie. What do you think?
So I'm fully on board with Home Alone as a Christmas movie,
so
personally.
I thought we were going to have some healthy debate, but you and I are on board with everything.
I think that one is full-blown Christmas. I don't know how you wouldn't see that one as Christmas.
Well,
I
mean, the arguments I've heard against it are just that it's really about him being home alone. There's not, I mean, it's almost like Die Hard in the sense that Christmas is in the background, but it's not a full-on Santa and presents and that kind of thing. Whereas Home Alone 2 kind of is. Like, it ends with all the presents and all that kind of stuff that the rich toy store owner gets him. But no, I'm on board too. Home Alone is actually one of my go-tos every year, as is Home Alone 2. So, but let me ask. So
I guess, go ahead. I wonder, though, if the debate could be settled by what is shown over Christmas and what qualifies as a Christmas movie. Like, if you're on Christmas Day and you're scrolling through your TV guide, which we no longer really use, what movies are up there every single year on Christmas per tradition, you know? And if Die Hard's one of them, then maybe that settles the debate. I think Home Alone is absolutely. No one watches that until Christmas, you know?
No, I totally agree. I like Home Alone 2 because I feel like it's a bridge movie. I think you can watch it like right after Thanksgiving. So it kind of has that whole feel to it. It's not like it doesn't have to be in December or right near Christmas or on Christmas Day. I think you can roll a little early with Home Alone. I'm a Home Alone guy. So I did ask you to come prepared for this podcast. So today we're going to be talking about Christmas Vacation, by the way. I should have probably mentioned that earlier on. But we're going to be talking about Christmas Vacation. So I got some normal Fanacek stuff that we're going to do. Plus, we'll just do some conversational stuff. I'm not going to be snarky today. I'm not going to be making fun of things because it's the holiday spirit. But I did ask to maybe prepare your top holiday movies. Doesn't have to be top five or whatever qualifies as your top. But do you have a list ready to go?
Not ready to go, but I probably could just tell you. I think Christmas Vacation for me is one that is a tradition. Goes back to my childhood. So I've been watching that almost every year since I was probably too young to watch it, probably 8 or 9 to watch it. And it was something that my extended family all get together. They actually get together over Thanksgiving and celebrate Christmas with one side of my family, my dad's extended relatives. And so that has been like a Christmas celebration. And it just, for whatever reason, when I was a kid, they started watching it and it was just like every single year we watched it. And so I've seen it 50 times, you know? So tough for that not to be number one for me, except as you and I have discussed a lot offline, Love Actually is one of my all-time favorite movies of any kind. Gotcha. And so it's a really hard, you know, nostalgia versus just what I enjoy in a movie. Those are 1A, 1B, we'll call it.
Got it. I love it.
And then I think there's like maybe some more tiers. You know, the next tier for me, Elf and Home Alone kind of fall into. And I think Home Alone over Elf. Because of, again, nostalgia in that case. But Home Alone and Elf are right there next. I don't have a whole lot of history with like Miracle on 34th Street or Christmas Story or any of those. I don't really have a lot of history with those, so I can't necessarily throw those in there. I'm not even sure what number five would be for me.
Interesting. I like it. I'm on board with you for a lot of these. So So my top would be Love Actually as well. Love Actually is probably my number one. And I'll talk about that. Christmas Vacation, Elf for me. It's a Wonderful Life. I'm a big fan of It's a Wonderful Life. And I hadn't watched it in years. And it was actually on the other night. I found that I had like a 2-hour window. I was home alone. And I came across it and just remembered how much I love that movie. Just how great a movie that is. That one's one of mine. I do like Christmas Story. But I like it Day Of because, you know, there's those channels. I think it's like TBS or something or one of the TNT, one of them. Those channels you never really watch. But
Turner Movie Classics. Yeah.
Yeah. They show it 24 hours all day Christmas, but you get the East Coast feed and the West Coast. So literally you have two channels just showing it all day long. My story with that, and I've got a backstory to some of this, but when I was a kid, Christmas Story was, you know, they'd roll in the in class in school, they'd roll in the cart with the TV on it, you know, and that was the movie that they were comfortable showing the kids. So like, I feel like I had to watch it in school every year, not had to, but you know, I watched it in school every year, but for me, it's a Day Of Christmas tradition. I like to have it on in the background while we're opening presents, I have my mimosas and that kind of stuff. They made the sequel, which I'm not, well, there was already a sequel, kind of a crappy one, but now they brought the original cast back. Peter Billingsley is back. And I haven't seen it yet, but I want to, watch the original first and watch the new one. But
yeah,
it's funny that my Christmas Vacation tradition started in 2014. So did my Love Actually. So 2014 was like a banner Christmas year.
Wow.
Yeah. Because 2014, I forget my wife saying, "Hey, you know, there's this movie I heard we should watch, Love Actually." And I was like, I've heard of it. Rom-com, one of those rom-coms where there's like 85 storylines going on. I was like, whatever. I picked the movies like 99% of the time. So I gave her that. Boy, did I fall in love with that movie. Love that movie. Like, I get so excited when that movie starts. And I won't watch it all the rest of the year. Like, I mean, it's all I could do.
Oh, yeah.
Watch it if I come across it. You know what I mean? I save it for that night. It's magical. I love that movie.
Yep. I'm totally with you. We're the same way.
Christmas Vacation for me started as a work thing, which is weird. So in 2014, I have like a leadership role in work. And we did a Dirty Santa in 2014. And what I ended up with was a DVD of Christmas Vacation and a DVD of It's a Wonderful Life. Not bad, you know. I mean, I think I still had a DVD player back then, you know, but anyway, that's sure, what I ended up with. Well, and they just sat on my desk. I threw them on my desk and kind of forgot about it. Well, like a week or two later, the way it works is the staff has to stay like on December 23rd till like noon or something. I can come and go as I please, but like the admin staff, they all have to stay. So just to be, even though I had nothing to do, I would show up that morning and I basically sit on my ass until they get to home. Cause I don't think it's a good look for me to go home while they're there working, and they make maybe 50 grand a year if that, you know what I mean? So anyway, so one year or 2014, I'm sitting there and I have like 4 hours to kill. And I was like, well, I might as well pop this movie on in my you know, computer DVD player thing, you know, my laptop. And that's when I refell in love with it, because I actually saw it in the theater. But I didn't think much of it. I mean, it was kind of a – and I'll talk about this later, but it's on its own. It's not a great movie. But it's just goofy enough and heartwarming enough that you kind of attach yourself to it. But I mean, in the grand scheme of comedies, even in the grand scheme of vacation movies, it's not that great. Like the original Christmas Vacation is killer. Or I mean, Marine, the original National Lampoon's Vacation, where they're going to Wally World. I mean, that's a killer movie. But anyway, that's where it starts. So 2014, I started. So my tradition became every year I'd watch Christmas Vacation alone. Like there'd be one year where, or one night where I find myself home alone. That was my tradition. I'd watch it alone by myself. Then last year, I actually watched it with my wife and older daughter. And this year, you and your wife came over and we kind of watched it. Mostly just drank eggnog and
yeah,
dance battle.
It's one of those though that you've got, I mean, you've got the moose cups, which is just glorious. Yes. And so you just got to have the eggnog in the moose cup you're watching it.
I've got coasters. I've got Christmas Vacation coasters. I've got the metal bottle opener, which is also the moose. And then the eggnog never tastes as good as it does out of those glasses, man.
So. I completely agree. Yeah, I think it's one of those things like I haven't really critically analyzed the film as far as how good it truly is, because it's become such a part of our lexicon, you know, of like all the jokes in my family. And like we get together with the extended family and someone's drinking whatever it is, not even eggnog. And it's good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Oh,
you got one of those, or you've got, you know. Oh, it's not. Anytime anyone brings a dog and it's just rummaging through the trash, he'll find something. Or he's yakking on a bone. Oh, he got it up. Like it's so many different references that are made throughout that time together that it's part of the family.
I feel like we've all collectively agreed to just love this movie. And you're right. You can quote it all day long. I mean, it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I just remember seeing it in the theater. I must have been 13 because it came out in 89. And I don't know. I wasn't terribly impressed with it. But then again, now it's one of my favorites. Like I said, I own all the stuff. I got a t-shirt with the shitters full. Next year, I plan on doing it in my front yard. I'm going to get a mannequin and dress it up like Eddie. I'm going to have to do the chair face on its back with the imprint of the dead cat, you know? And I'm going to propose. Yep. I'm going to do the whole thing, whether my wife likes it or not. I'm doing a cousin Eddie jumping out the shitter in my front yard.
Get the saucer that's been fried as well. Get the saucer that Clark greased up with the non-nutritive cereal harnish.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Get that thing in there too.
Like, that's a great example of what I'm talking about, though. That scene's kind of a little bit, you know, when he's shooting through the woods, it's like, all right, I'll go to the bathroom. No, that's stupid. Scene.
Yes. You've really kind of made me think about the movie in a different light, and I'm not sure I like it. So,
I don't know. But I 100% agree. It's heartwarming. It's part of my, and I used to love watching it alone, because what I loved was that, what made me the happiest was that scene when he's in the attic. Now, I'd be sitting there alone, having a drink. He's there alone in the attic. And it just made me feel all Christmassy. I don't know. So, but now I've opened it up and I watch it with other people. So, but let's talk a little bit about the movie. So it's 1989. It was written by Mr. John Hughes based on a short thing he did. So he did a short story called Christmas 59, which was published in the December 1980 issue of National Lampoon magazine. John Hughes, as we know, legend, right? Written and directed tons of movies. So it was directed by Jeremiah Chechik, I think it is. Do you know who that is?
Nope.
Nor do I. But there's a backstory here. So here's what's interesting. So Chevy Chase, universally known as just being a prick. I'm going to say what it is. He's an asshole. Very few people on the planet enjoy Chevy Chase, to the point that I think he actually may be bipolar. Like something's clearly wrong with him. He says homophobic things, racist things. You know, he's been kicked off of sets. He was basically banned from SNL. He's not allowed to go host anymore. It's a whole to do. Anyway, I don't want to besmirch the man, but it is what it is. So it was actually originally going to be directed by Chris Columbus. So John Hughes is writing, he's producing. They hire Chris Columbus to direct A Christmas Vacation, famous story. So he starts directing and he realizes they're in pre-production. He goes, I can't work with Chevy Chase. This guy's a jerk. So basically walks off the film and he thinks to himself, I just destroyed my career. John Hughes, who's a legend and very powerful, has brought me to direct. I decide the star is an asshole. I walk off the film. I'm not going to do it. So I give it to Jeremiah Chechik, right? John Hughes thinks about it. He's like, you know, I like Chris Columbus, and I get where he's coming from. So he actually gives him another chance. He gives him another script. He goes, okay, I know you don't want to do Christmas Vacation. You don't like Chevy. I got this other script. If you want to take a whack at it, Home Alone. So no. Chris Columbus goes to his home, which is arguably the biggest movie of like the decade. Forget about holiday movie, of any movie, right? I mean, that movie was a behemoth. So Chris Columbus walked off of this to go, and he ended up getting John, still working with John Hughes and directed Home Alone. So interesting story. Dang. But it grossed $71 million at the box office. So it was a pretty big hit. And it did spawn a sequel, Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure. Which came out in 2003. I think I mentioned this on another podcast, or maybe to you privately. I don't even recall. But I one night again, I think my wife and kids went to bed. I'm half in the bag, eggnog and beer. And I'm like, you know what? There it is on Amazon. How bad could it be? I mean, it's Cousin Eddie. I mean, just Cousin Eddie alone. I think I got maybe 20 minutes into it. Turns it off. It started off with like some experiment on monkeys or something. And I don't know. It was just stupid. And I had to bail on it.
You can ruin absolutely anything. It can be ruined. Yes. Anything can be ruined.
So. Well, they ruined that. And of course, it did actually. I mean, the Vacation stories obviously spawned another sequel, which was Vegas Vacation. And then they redid it. Not redid it, but they did another one later on. Ed Helms taking over the Rusty role. So Rusty has grown up. It's played by Ed Helms, Christina Applegate. Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo have a cameo in it. It's actually worth watching. I really enjoyed that one.
Just a few years ago. I think I remember that coming out.
Yeah, I'm thinking 2017-ish, maybe 18, like in that range.
Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, it's not going to change your life, but it was a fun movie. And it was just kind of cool to see. It was basically the same scenario as the first one, as the original Vacation, with a cameo by the parents, you know, Clark W. Griswold and Ellen Griswold. So we know the movie. Let's talk about the cast. So the cast, Chevy Chase plays Clark Griswold. Beverly D'Angelo is his wife, Ellen. Juliette Lewis is Audrey. Johnny Galecki is Rusty. And so one of the inside jokes of these movies is that the kids are always different. This was the first movie, though, where they actually swapped the ages, too. So in the first two, Rusty's older than Audrey. And then this one, for whatever, I don't know, maybe they just like Juliette Lewis that much, but they made her older. Rusty was younger. Randy Quaid is Cousin Eddie. Miriam Flynn as Cousin Catherine, his long-suffering wife. We're going to talk about his folks. So Clark's folks are John Randolph and Diane Ladd. Ellen's folks are E.G. Marshall, Doris Roberts. The elders, if you will. Uncle Lewis is played by William Hickey. And then Aunt Bethany by Mae Questel. And that's really who all I'm going to talk about today. There's other people, obviously, in the movie, like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. But I don't want this to be a four-hour-long podcast. So why don't we hop into some of the Santa check type stuff before we kind of just make it more conversational. I mean, it wouldn't be me if I didn't bore people with all my IMDb stuff. But I'm going to play a game. So I started doing some research, and I thought, I'm going to play a holiday game with you. So I'm going to talk about the in-laws, Clark's parents, Ellen's parents, but I'm going to see if I can connect them all as I go. So I'm going to go boom, 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 boom. So we're going to play a game here. All right, so the first character I'm going to talk about are Clark's folks. His father is Clark Sr., played by John Randolph. He was born June 1st, 1915, passed away February 24th in 2004. He was 88 years old. He was born Emmanuel Hirsch Cohen in New York City. He was a son of Jewish immigrants. That's kind of a recurring theme for some of these actors. Interesting backstory, though. His wife, Sarah Cunningham, they were blacklisted from working in Hollywood films and in New York film and television after 1948. So in 1955, they were both called before the House Un-American Activities Committee to testify concerning ongoing investigations regarding communist infiltration in the American entertainment industry. So he was blacklisted for a while. So was his wife. That's just insane to me. And we're running out of actors that we're going to talk about that suffered through that. But he's one of the last ones. You know what I mean? And it's just... it's crazy work. So he was blacklisted. 183 acting credits. His first was a 1948 film called The Naked City. His last was a 2003 film called Numb. So let's talk about The Naked City real quick. Came out in 1948. A step-by-step look at a murder investigation on the streets of New York. This was one of the first films to list the technical credits, by the way. So like, you know, grip, cinematographer, lights, camera, all that stuff. It's one of the first films to ever do that. Stanley Kubrick hung out on the set a lot. I'm not sure in what capacity. I tried to research it. They said he spent a lot of the time on the set as a photographer. So I don't know if he was but I don't think he worked for the production. So I don't know if he was – anyway. But Stanley Kubrick, obviously famous director. Clockwork Orange was Kubrick. The Shining. Yeah, that was a big one. Stephen King hated that. Are you a Shining guy?
I've only seen it once, I think. It's been a long time. I don't know. If I liked it, it was because it was a classic kind of thing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Stephen King hated it. I mean, so I read the book, so different from the book, and Stephen King was so pissed off about it. They used a lot of guerrilla filmmaking in around New York City, so they didn't have permits in this movie. So they were just like flying around New York, filming things. A lot of the extras were actually people walking by. They didn't even know they were going to be in a movie. So you can't get away with that anymore. Career highlights. He did a lot of the early anthology stuff, right? So John Randolph was in, you know, Actors Studio, Hands of Mystery, Craft Theater, Philco Television Playhouse. So when TV first started, it was a while before they had regular scripted program. What they would do is just take plays and film them, or everything was anthology stuff. So we're going to take this short version of this and you know, short stories, plays, that kind of thing. So he did a lot of that. In the 60s, he did a bunch of guest spots. So between 64 and 65, he did three episodes of The Defenders, starring E.G. Marshall. E.G. Marshall played Ellen Griswold's dad. So we're going to talk about E.G. Marshall here. That The Defenders was his show. In 65, he did For the People, starring William Shatner. He did The Patty Duke Show, The Invaders, Mission Impossible. He starts to transition into film. He did the 1968 TV movie version of Mice and Men. That was one of my favorite books as a kid, of Mice and Men. Starting now, he does more TV. He does Hawaii Five-O, The Interns. I don't know if you remember The Interns. I talked about The Interns in an early actually, I think in my first episode of Fanacek. The Interns was a show from like the 60s or 1970 where it had the worst synopsis. It was about interns at a hospital. It was like two swingers, a black.
That's right. That's right. I do remember this synopsis.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought about that movie or that show again. It popped up here though. He did Escape from Planet of the Apes. There was like a million Planet of the Apes movies. He did Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. So All in the Family, Bonanza, Mannix, Serpico, the movie. He did Columbo. All my favorite stuff. Kojak, McMillan and Wife with Rock Hudson. Wonder Woman. All the President's Men. Great movie. Dustin Hoffman. Robert Redford about the takedown of Watergate. They played Woodward and Bernstein based on the book by Woodward and Bernstein. That's one of my favorite movies. He did the 1976 version of King Kong, which for me was the original version. So I know there's like that 1930s King Kong that you always see, but yep. The first one I ever saw was the 1960 or 76 one. Sorry, Jeff Bridges and Jessica Lange. Jessica Lange in 1976 was a sight. Let me tell you, no wonder King Kong liked her. The Bob Newhart Show, Lou Grant, he did Heaven Can Wait, that Warren Beatty movie, which I don't know. People seem to love that movie. I don't get it. Vegas, MASH, Dallas, a lot. I mean, I could do this all day, right? He did all these shows. He stayed busy. So I'm not going to do interesting roles today where I make fun of stuff. I'm just in the holiday spirit, but I did find some fun things. So I got two fun points I want to point out. So he did an episode of The Trials of O'Brien. The Trials of O'Brien was a TV show that ran 65 to 66 and only lasted 22 episodes. But the reason I like it is because it starred a pre-Columbo Peter Falk was in this. So the synopsis is a flamboyant Shakespeare-quoting New York City defense attorney always seems to get into trouble. So this was Peter Falk before he played Columbo. And I love Columbo. Okay. I love Peter Falk. I've got a cool picture of Peter Falk up here that's autographed that my wife got for me. The show didn't last long. It was sunk. It aired Friday nights, first of all, which is typically the death toll for any TV show, unless you're a tween. I guess TGIF was the thing when we were
TGIF,
young.
TGIF, man. Yeah.
That was a big deal.
Step by Step and Urkel, I think, was on there. Family Matters.
Yes, you mentioned that on your last podcast as well. You guys talked about how you
we did talk about Family Matters. Carl Winslow.
That's right.
Al Powell.
And the whole time I'm freaking out because, yeah, Ethan said Reginald Johnson. I was like, it's Val Johnson. How dare you disrespect Carl Winslow? Boy, yeah.
I got it for you. Don't worry.
Show is a great example. We've seen this happen a lot where people bookish. So that show was actually, I wasn't prepared to talk about this, but my mind was reeling when I was listening to Fold in the Cheese. So that was actually a spinoff of another show. So Harriet, the mom in Family Matters, was a security guard at the newspaper where Larry and Balky worked in Perfect Strangers. Okay, in Chicago. And then she got her own spinoff, right? So she gets a spinoff. So she kind of thinks it's her show because she's recurring on Perfect Strangers. And then she goes and gets this TV show alongside a guy coming off a hit movie, Reginald L. Johnson. So these two foolishly think, oh, it's going to be a show about our family, right? We're the parents. It's about us. What no one counted on was that effing guest star, which is supposed to be one appearance of Urkel. And it became about him. That's supposed to be a one-off appearance. He borrowed, I think his mom or dad's glasses before even walking on set. That's why the glasses are so big. It was supposed to be a one-off thing, and he just stole it, and it became the Urkel show. And then it became ridiculous. I think it was an episode where they shrunk, like Urkel invented a machine that shrunk them. Then Urkel had he wasn't Steven Urkel anymore. He was Stefan. Do you remember this? He had an alter.
Stefan Urkel.
Urkel. Yeah.
He made himself like a hunk, a hunky jock. He was always inventing. That was his whole thing. He was inventing stuff all the time.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, they talk about that phrase, jump the shark, which is a reference to Fonzie jumping the shark. And every show eventually does it. But Urkel inventing stuff, I think, is when they jump the sharks. I do also remember specifically them shrinking. Him and Carl got shrunk, like, by a shrink ray. And they're in the kitchen, and, like, with, like, a giant banana or a giant this. And I was like, oh, man. And meanwhile, these two adults thought the show was about them. Same thing happened, like, to I can't remember his damn name, Conrad Bain. He was coming off of Maude. Maude actually comes up today. But he was on a hit show called Maude in the 70s. So then he gets his own NBC show where it's supposed to be about him, and it's Different Strokes. And it was about him until Gary Coleman clicked. I mean, and then everyone in the country loved Gary Coleman. And now Conrad Bain has like two lines an episode, and the show's about – anyway, I've gone off on a long tangent. But Family Matters, I just feel – I'm glad I'm a little bit older than you, because I did not grow up on Family Matters.
I absolutely did. TGIF was my jam as a kid. That was for me too.
But it evolved. Like, my version of TGIF was the years before that. Like, when I remember TGIF starting, it was even before Full House, like Perfect Strangers. Oh, hell, I don't even remember what they were anymore. But it was – and then it just changed over time. So as I graduated out of TGIF, you were going into it, and you had Family Matters.
It was a bunch of crap. Now, I had Boy Meets World, which I know – I saw you mentioned a couple episodes ago, and someone didn't even register, because you're talking about Mr. Feeney, who was an icon to my generation. We had Step by Step with Patrick Duffy and Suzanne Summers.
Oh, yes.
Then we have Family Matters. Full House would be in there. And they would rotate. You know, after a few years, something would kind of fall off and go into syndication, and something new would come in. But it was always, I think it was four shows. It was like a two-hour block.
Yep. And then like, there was always like some cast members of one of the shows, like doing like interstitials between the episodes or during the commercials, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All right, let's get back to watching Family Matters or something. You know what I mean? Yeah, I remember all that clearly. But yeah, I forget what shows it started with. I remember when TGIF started, and then as those shows would get canceled, they'd be replaced. So you came up on the later version of TGIF. But yeah, anyway, I don't know what the hell even started that. But anyway, so Peter Falk had a show. It got sunk. Oh, that's why, because it was on Friday nights and it got sunk. It was also up against an amazing show called The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And so Peter Falk could not he couldn't last. But however, the show only lasted 22 episodes, but it had an amazing, amazing array of guest stars. I wrote some of them down. Elaine Stritch. Elaine Stritch had this amazing Broadway career. She was one of Rudy's teachers in The Cosby Show, too. That's how I know her. Dolph Sweet. He was the dad in Give Me a Break. David Carradine, Kung Fu. He was Bill in Kill Bill. You know, he died. He died from autoerotic asphyxiation, by the way. So this is the PSA part of Santa Check. Stay away from autoerotic asphyxiation, kids. You can die in a
keep your airways clear.
You can die in a Filipino hotel room, because I believe he's in a hotel in the Philippines, found in the closet. Anyway, it is what it is. But he was Bill in Kill Bill. Britt Eklund, Martin Sheen did it. Jack Albertson did the show. You and I agree on him. Jack Albertson was the grandpa from Willy Wonka, and he's full of shit, right?
Bedridden. Grandpa Joe.
Yeah.
First of all, got his ass right out of bed and started doing a jig. I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
Like, instantly, one thing goes, well, this guy's out of bed. If I'm the mom, I walk out at that point. Like, I've been slaving for years, working a couple jobs, paying all the bills. This kid gets a golden ticket, and now you're dancing? I would have thrown everyone out of the house. I was so pissed.
Probably some kind of Medicare fraud or welfare fraud or something.
He should go to jail. Yeah, if he were getting any SSI, yes, I think he'd be brought up with charges.
That's right.
I don't know if the social security situation is in England, but yes, that should be looked into. Other actors who did this show: Angela Lansbury. She was, of course, Murder, She Wrote. Cloris Leachman, Rita Moreno, Alan Alda, Roger Moore. He was later on a James Bond. He was a little too old for James Bond, in my opinion. But anyway, James Bond. Robert Loggia, great actor. He was the boss in Big. Famously did the piano scene with Tom Hanks in Big. Dun, dun, dun. And then he did. He had a great turn on The Sopranos. He played a character named Feach LaManna. Ooh, one of my favorites. And Tony Soprano thought about killing him and said, send him back to prison. Burgess Meredith did this. Robert Blake, Chuck Grodin. Oh, I wrote Chuck Grodin. It's Charles Grodin, but I thought I was being funny maybe. Milton Berle did it. And I'll stop talking, but I can keep going on forever. So for a show that only lasted 22 episodes, it seems like everyone did it. Now, two fun credits, and then I promise I'll move on, because I have a tendency to be long-winded, right?
You do.
You never noticed? And that's why you got to be careful these tangents, man, because now I'm thinking about SSI. I think that'd be a great sequel to Willy Wonka. This is the grandpa's in jail. Too.
Where are they now? The Where Are They Now episode.
Yeah. That's a weird movie, too, by the way. I mean, I know you have kids. I don't know if they're a little too young for that yet. When my kids got to that age of starting to watch that movie, I was like, this is a really bizarre, dark.
It's pretty trippy. It's pretty trippy. Yeah.
I don't care for it. I've never been a big fan of it. I don't know. Kids are dying.
One I grew up on. That was one they would show at my school.
Yes.
Not during Christmas, but they would show that at school all the time. And so that's nostalgic for me.
Same. It would show in my school too. I don't like weird dark stuff. And it's weird dark, especially that is it a boat? Don't they go through the tunnel in a boat and things get real weird and I don't know.
Yeah, they're on a boat. Yeah.
It's on a boat. Okay, so I want to point out two fun credits to illustrate one fun point. All right, so in 1951, Jack Albertson. No, it's not Jack Albertson. Whoever this guy is. It is Jack Albertson. No, who's the actor we even talk about? I don't even remember. Anyway, it is what it is. So he does an episode of Treasury Men in Action. Okay, Treasury Men in Action. I'm going to read the synopsis for you so you get a feel for what this is. Treasury Men in Action. A squad of Treasury Department agents headed by the chief go after counterfeiters and other criminals who commit crimes that fall under the Treasury Department's jurisdiction. That's the first thing, okay? So then later on, oh, by the way, James Dean did an episode of the show too before he was James Dean. Then later on, 20 years later, this guy does an episode of O'Hara, U.S. Treasury. So the point I'm trying to make is that at some point, the Treasury Department used to be cool. Like, when was that?
The only Treasury movie that I actually really love this movie is Catch Me If You Can. This is just a great movie with DiCaprio and Tom Hanks.
Sure.
And that's, you know, true story, Frank Abagnale. But that's the only time I see the Treasury Department get a lot of play.
But even that wasn't the Treasury. He had a great name.
Hanratty?
Hanratty. Carl Hanratty. Played by Tom Hanks. He was in the FBI. No, he worked in
FBI,
like
yeah.
I mean, even that was even technically FBI. Yes, I'm talking like this is actually, the actual Treasury Department.
Treasury. I don't know. Closest connection I can make.
I think I have to look back. I could be wrong. I think, Kevin Costner's character, based on the real guy, Elliot Ness. I think that guy worked for the Treasury. He's the one who took down Al Capone. They made the Untouchables in the 80s. It was him and Sean Connery. De Niro played Al Capone. I think that was the Treasury Department. But anyway, I don't know. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting. So now, in 1996, this guy does an episode of – I have to call him this guy, and I don't even remember his name. John Randolph.
Senior. Clark Sr.
John Randolph. Okay. Man, I'm quite the podcast host. You would never know there's actually a lot of research that goes into this. Okay. So in 1996, he does an episode of Touched by an Angel. Guess who else did an episode of Touched by an Angel? His movie wife, Clark's mom, Nora. By the way, I didn't realize her name was Nora.
Oh,
how about that?
I don't think I did either.
Nora Griswold. Yes.
How about that?
So Nora Griswold was played by Diane Ladd. So I've connected the two, like I said I would. So let's talk about Diane Ladd. I call her Diane Ladd. Laura Dern calls her mom. So she's Laura Dern's mom. She and Bruce Dern had a daughter named Laura. She is an Oscar nominee, Golden Globe winner, which we'll talk about the Golden Globe here in a minute. She's still alive. She was born November 29th, 1935, 145 acting credits. Her first was a TV series called The Big Story in 1949. Her most recent 2022 movie, Gigi and Nate, which I have not seen. A lot of early TV work and some long forgotten TV shows for her. So she did shows I know nothing about. The Secret Storm, Stanley, Decoy, The Walter Winchell File, Naked City, but not the movie that John Randolph was in. This was a TV, not related TV show. She did The Detectives, Wide Country. 1963, she starts guesting on some well-remembered shows. Now she's doing the hit show, 77 Sunset Strip, which is a really cool show with a really cool title. I always like that show. Perry Mason, Hazel, starring Don DeFore. I did a great Don DeFore. That was a lot of fun. The Fugitive, The Big Valley. The Big Valley star was Ronald Reagan. So you get the idea. She's doing all these shows. Around 1969, though, a lot more movie work starts rolling in. And in 1974, Diane Ladd blows up. She does Chinatown. Chinatown classic, directed by Roman Polanski, produced famously by Bob Evans. Robert Evans goes by Bob Evans. Star Jack Nicholson. Chinatown's a classic. And a great documentary about Robert Evans called The Kid Stays in the Picture. I recommend it. It's just a really cool glimpse. And he was a very famous producer, womanizer. He was married to Ally McGraw for a while. And then Ally McGraw got stolen by Steve McQueen. So Steve McQueen stole his wife. It's a whole thing. But Roman Polanski directed Chinatown. Robert Evans produced it. And they had a big fight over who was going to get it. Like, it was going to be Robert Evans's Chinatown or Roman Polanski's Chinatown. And apparently Roman Polanski won because it's Roman Polanski's Chinatown. And that, it's happened. This movie was made 5 years after the murders, after his wife and unborn child were murdered by the Manson family. Also in 1974, though, Diane Ladd does Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. She played Flo. What's interesting about that is that became a TV show called Alice. Interestingly, she later joined the cast of Alice, but not as Flo. So she was Flo in the movie. She joined the cast as a character named Belle Dupree, and she won a Golden Globe for it. So I thought that's kind of neat. So she did the cardinal sin of doing the movie and the show, but a different character, because Flo was famous by some other actress who, I think Polly Holiday was her name. She was the one that famously "Kiss My Grits" was the line. Kiss my grits.
Yeah.
I don't know. That predates you. See, I was raised on that. You were raised on Family Matters. So that's the difference. I was watching reruns of Alice, and you're watching.
It speaks volumes to the people we are today.
Yes.
So did she get the shit? I didn't have shit else to do. Shit better to do. What is the award?
Damn, I had nothing better to do. Award.
Damn, I had nothing better to do.
If I were doing Alice, she would. I think she would win the. She'd get the award, but with an asterisk.
Because, yeah, different character.
People who did, like Vic Tayback was actually in the movie. Alice Doesn't Live Anywhere. He played Mel, and he was in the TV show played Mel. So like he would be a true recipient of the Damn I Didn't Have Anything Better To Do award. Diane Ladd, I don't know, she had a big career and then she did the show, but a different character, and she won a Golden Globe for it. So maybe she gets a pass. Because not only did she do it, but she clearly did it well.
She crushed it. Yeah.
Anyway, so 1987, she has Black Widow with Deborah Winger. That was a real big movie. Deborah Winger was like the hottest actress in the world for like a small window of time. She did Urban Cowboy, Officer and Gentleman, Black Widow. She did a movie called Legal Eagles, I think it's called, Robert Redford. And then she just kind of went away. I think she decided to just raise the family and get out of Hollywood. Wild at Heart, Rambling Rose, both of those with her daughter, Laura Dern. Laura Dern won an Oscar for Rambling Rose, I believe. 1998, Diane Ladd did Primary Colors. That's a great movie, too. Primary Colors is that John Travolta movie that's, they can't say it, but it's based on Bill Clinton. And just, it's just wild. Yeah. It's Bill and Hillary Clinton, but different names, of course. And a great Kathy Bates is in it. Kathy Bates, Misery. She won an Oscar for Misery. She was in The Office for a while. She played the lady who owned Sabre, you know? But she comes into this movie, and I think, I don't know if she says any words that aren't curses. She just comes in like a hurricane cursing it. And it's a great movie for Kathy Bates. I love that movie. After that, Diane Ladd continued to work really steadily. And again, I'm not going to focus on all the what the hell credits that would go against my holiday spirit, but I will point out two things that seem kind of fun. So in 1962, she did a movie called 40 Pounds of Trouble. What's 40 Pounds of Trouble about? Let's take a look. Hilarity ensues when a casino manager spends a day at Disneyland with a cute but troublesome little girl. Sounds like me. I took my daughter to Vegas last year. This is Disneyland. But anyway, he's a casino manager. So this was the first movie ever to be allowed to be filmed in Disneyland. It never happened before.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I talked about Disneyland a couple episodes ago, because Don DeFore was the first person to own a restaurant in the property that wasn't based on a character. Mickey Mouse is this or whatever. It was Don DeFore's, you know, Silver Banjo Barbecue. So I thought it was kind of neat. It's the first time a movie had been allowed to film in Disneyland. It was directed by Norman Jewison. Norman Jewison has had a huge career. He directed In the Heat of the Night, another movie that became a TV show, The Thomas Crown Affair, the original with Steve McQueen, Fiddler on the Roof, Jesus Christ Superstar, which I've talked about. I love that movie. James Caan's movie, Rollerball in 75. And Justice for All with Al Pacino. That's the courtroom movie where Al Pacino famously, whenever people do an impression of Al Pacino, before they would do hoo-ha, hoo-ha. Before that, it was, you're out of order, he's out of order, this whole courtroom's out of order. Anyway, that was the old Pacino impression before he did Scent of a Woman. But that's where it's coming from, a movie called Injustice for All. Moonstruck, The Hurricane, lots of stuff from Norman Jewison. So last, the 1979 TV movie Willa. So I made a note to talk about Willa, and I don't remember why. So let's look at the synopsis. So Willa wants to make it on her own. Her mom's a drunk. Her husband has abandoned her. And she has two kids. She waitresses during the day and loads produce at night in exchange for truck driving lessons. Okay. This is why I wanted to read it. She is determined to become a truck driver. It will not let obstacles block her path. So a lot of people in this. Clu Gulager's in this. Nancy Marchand. That was Tony Soprano's mom. John Amos, Cloris Leachman, Corey Feldman was in this. I met Corey Feldman this week.
That you did.
I met him.
I still have to hear about that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk about that real quick. So
okay. Let's hear it.
He's an iconic actor. I mean, he, The Goonies, Stand By Me, which I really want my daughter to watch Stand By Me because it's about 12-year-olds. And And she's 12 now, and I'd like her to watch it while she's 12. Lost Boys, Friday the 13th Part 4, which to me was iconic. That was the final chapter until they made, you know, 8 more after it. But I did meet Corey Feldman. So he's been doing music for like 30 years, like since the early 90s. Props to him. Man. He's not stopped. He keeps doing it and doing it and doing it. It was interesting. So I will say this, $30, it was at a small venue, $30 gets you right in front of the stage. I mean, I'm like, I can smell the guy. He's so close to me. That dude performed for probably about 3 hours. You would have thought it was a sold out crowd at the Bridgestone. Like he was performing like his life depended on it. And what occurred to me is I have a lot more respect for him now because I think it's easy to make fun of people, right? And he's goofy. Don't get me wrong. He's goofy and he's definitely out there. But my perception was like, okay, he failed at acting. So he's doing whatever he can to stay in the limelight. I don't think that's the case. I think this is what he wants to be doing. I think if movies roles started coming his way, I think he'd probably rather pursue the music, maybe in larger venues. But it was interesting to say the least, but it was a lot of fun. And then I paid a little extra money and got to go meet him. And he gives you a lot of time, shook his hand. We were bullshitting for a while. He did a big autograph for me because I had a VIP lanyard because I paid the money to be a VIP and go meet him. And he signed the whole back and like drew a picture and he does like a whole thing. Like it was kind of cool, man. That was a lot of fun. He's tiny. He's like 5'5".
Really?
Yeah. But I will tell you this. He works his ass off. I've been to a lot of concerts, man. I've seen all the big acts. I've never seen anyone work that hard.
Like, you got to respect that. He's pouring it out.
Yes, but it was a late night. And I mean, and the joke I had with my wife was like, towards the end, every song, I was like, thank you, Nashville. Like, I kept waiting for that. Like, you know what I mean? Thank you, good night, Nashville. Like, and he'd be like, all right, now I'm going to go to my first album and we're going to play as many songs off it as we can. And I was like, I go to bed at 8:30 typically. Like, this is
too late.
So yeah. I actually sent all them home. So my wife and the couple, they went home. I Ubered. I stayed, I finished the concert, and then I went and met him. I got home like it well after midnight, which for me is very late. Anyway, but it was a cool experience. Yikes. I met Corey Feldman. Yes. And now I have that lanyard hanging up on my office and he signed it for me and it's pretty cool. And I will say, super friendly guy. Wasn't pretentious. Yeah. I mean, he took the time to meet everyone, shook hands. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he was a long line of people waiting to meet him. And I thought, oh man, is he going to do like the quick? Yeah, everyone sat down. He answered all their questions, signed all their stuff. And some people like were really nerdy, man. Like, all I had was a lanyard that I got at the show. People had posters, books, DVDs, and he signed every damn thing. I was like, look at him go. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, he's not the most talented musician in the world.
But anyway, doing what he loves, man. You know? Doing what he loves.
Doing what he loves, man. So, it's like me. I'm not the most talented podcast in the world, but we should have packed a lunch. This thing's going to go forever. Okay. One last thing about Diane Ladd. In 1968, she did an episode of Ironside. Guess who else did an episode of Ironside? That's right. Her Christmas Vacation daughter-in-law's father, Ellen Griswold's dad, Art, played by E.G. Marshall, also did an episode of Ironside. So I'm still connecting them. It's a stretch, but I'm connecting them. So shall we learn more about E.G. Marshall?
We shall.
Okay. He was born June 18th, 1914. He died August 24th, 1998. He was 84 years old. Most famous for his role in the show called The Defenders, which we'll talk about. He was also the president in Superman 2. The old Christopher Reeve version of Suits, because I think there's new ones now. He also did 12 Angry Men, which I watched a lot as a kid. That was my first time ever. I liked reading as a kid. I was actually a very avid reader as a kid. But for whatever reason, we got assigned 12 Angry Men, and I didn't want to read it. So I went and rented the movie. And I got busted because and when my teacher was talking to me about it, I think my teacher suspected I didn't read it. He was talking about it, and I made reference to the character that was also in The Odd Couple. Because Jack Klugman was in this movie. He famously on the TV show played Oscar Madison in The Odd Couple. And once I mentioned that, he was like, well, I don't remember the play ever mentioning anything about The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
Said, well, yeah. All right. You got me then. Anyway, it is what it is. But I did eventually, I think, read the book, or it's a play, actually. Anyhow, so that's E.G. Marshall. Let's talk about him. 158 acting credits. He did his first was 1945's The House on 92nd Street. His final one was a 1998 TV movie called The Defenders, Choice of Evils. I couldn't read my handwriting. So that was based on his hit show. So he got a lot of mileage out of The Defenders. He did a lot of TV movies. In fact, the year before that, 97, he did another TV movie based on The Defenders. So a lot of Defenders. So let's just talk about that. Ran 61 to 65, 132 episodes. It was a legal show. It was about a father and son defense team. He was the father. The son was played by Robert Reed, who went on to be Mr. Brady on The Brady Bunch. So nice. he, uh, Yeah, he was closeted homosexual. It's sad, you know, that was still happening then. So he was gay. Robert E. West, for his career, had to hide it. He actually died, though, of AIDS-related stuff. I believe he was HIV positive, died of AIDS-related illness. But all around nice guy. The kids were very, very close to Robert Reed on the Brady Bunch. But let's look at E.G. Marshall's career. The first several credits were films working with folks like James Cagney and Jimmy Stewart, a lot of legends. He transitioned to TV like you do, especially back then. That's where all the work was. So Ford Theater Hour, Actors Studio, the Chevrolet, Teletheater, against all these anthology things, these plays that they're putting on. He continued to do both TV and movies until 1954 when he landed the Caine Mutiny. That was a big break from that. That was a big movie. Humphrey Bogart, Jose Ferrer, Fred McMurray. Fred McMurray was famous. He was the dad in My Three Sons, but he also did a movie called Double Indemnity, which is a classic. Jose Ferrer is related to George Clooney, but I don't know how. I think he's like his uncle or something. Anyway.
Okay.
Clooney comes from a lot of celebrities, you know, because Rosemary Clooney was his aunt. I think she was married to Jose Ferrer. That was his uncle. So I don't want to take anything away from Clooney, but he came from a lot of that stuff. So
he's without them, he'd be nothing. He'd be nothing. Look at the guy.
Yeah, so what? He's talented and good looking and charming.
So what?
So lots of us are. Yeah. He's from Kentucky, and I never really thought much about that kind of stuff until I lived in the South, right? And it's funny when you see some people who are from these that you would never imagine. You know who I just heard about? Courtney Cox is from Alabama, born and raised in Alabama. Would you have ever guessed that, having spent time in Alabama? It's just weird. There's nothing about her that strikes me as Southern at all.
No,
Born and raised in Alabama. And even Clooney, like I don't see, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Kentucky. I used to go to Louisville like several times a month for work. I don't see him as a Kentucky guy at all.
Yeah. He has a Lake Como mansion in Lake Como. I can't imagine him being satisfied in literally anywhere in Kentucky.
Yeah. But anyway, it just makes me laugh. But yeah, Courtney Cox, born and raised in Alabama. That's a weird one. All right, back to E.G. Marshall here. So Caine Mutiny was a big movie for him. He did 12 Angry Men. That was like a big cast. Henry Fonda, Jack Klugman, who I mentioned earlier, Martin Balsam, Lee Cobb. He did in 1960, he did an episode of Route 66, which you and I have talked about on the podcast before. Yeah. 61 to 65, he's doing The Defenders. So that's where all his work is. And he did a lot of stuff after. He did Tora, The Brady Bunch, which was a reunion with Robert Reed, The Virginian with Clu Gulager, Ironside, Billy Jack Goes to Washington. Boy, people love those Billy Jack movies, man. I think they suck. The first one was like a big hit. This guy named Tom Laughlin had a character named Billy Jack. People love it. Tom Laughlin's like a real famous asshole. Name we're talking about. I read a book about him once. Superman 2, Falcon Crest, Spencer for Hire, Murder, She Wrote, The Cosby Show. He did The Cosby Show. He did Nixon with Anthony Hopkins. He did Absolute Power with Clint Eastwood. He's had a great career. I found a couple fun things. So E.G. Marshall was in Clear and Present Danger, Pursuit of Happiness, Under Siege, and Lincoln. But not the ones you're thinking of. So I'll break those down. So Clear and Present Danger that we know of was a 90s movie with Harrison Ford based on the Tom Clancy book about Jack Ryan. It's one of those Jack Ryan movies. No. E.G. Marshall's was a 1970 TV movie with Hal Holbrook and Jack Albertson, the grandpa from Willy Wonka. He was in this. So there you go.
There you go. Grandpa Joe.
So then he did Pursuit of Happiness, but not the Will Smith movie. He did a 1971 movie with Barbara Hershey and Robert Klein. Robert Klein is a famous stand-up comedian, came out of Second City. So I got some pride there. I, too, came out of Second City. I am not a famous comedian, though. Under Siege. So he did Under Siege, not the Steven Seagal one with Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey. Did you ever see that movie, by the way?
No.
I've never seen it. Yeah.
Nope.
No, I won't watch a Steven Seagal movie.
I feel like I can see the cover of it, but I
right.
I never watched
it. This one's apparently good. I think it's because Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey, not because of Steven Seagal. But this one's always labeled as like the good Steven Seagal movie, but I still have never seen it. But he didn't do that. He did a 1986 TV movie, also about terrorists, but it had Hal Holbrook in it. And then he did Lincoln, but not Steven Spielberg's version with Daniel Day-Lewis. He did a 1992 TV movie with Jason Robards playing Lincoln. And E.G. Marshall only did VO and he did the voiceover. I'm not sure in what capacity, but. And then finally, E.G. Marshall did an episode of Nurse in 1982. So what's neat about that is that show didn't last long. It was 1981 to 1982, only lasted 25 episodes. But the lead in Nurse was Robert Reed. So again, another reunion for him and Mr. Brady from the Brady Bunch. So let's finish the game. He did Studio One. He did Play of the Week. He did The Defenders and he did Murder, She Wrote. Just like his Christmas Vacation wife, Ellen Griswold's mom, Frances, played by Doris Roberts. She was Everybody Loves Raymond, right? Something Barone. Yeah, I can't remember her name. Yeah. What was her name on that show? I don't know. Anyway, Doris Roberts, born November 4th, 1925. She died April 17th, 2016. She was 90. She was actually considerably older than her TV husband, too, Peter Boyle. I think she's like 15 years older than him. But you wouldn't have known looking at her. I just watched that Peter Boyle. I actually watched two Peter Boyle movies. So I'm reading this book. I just finished it, called Cinema Speculation. It's Tarantino's book. He wrote this nonfiction book about movies. And he goes to all these movies that he likes. So I thought, well, if I'm reading chapters on these movies, I'll watch them. So one of them was called Joe, starring Peter Boyle. It's like this 1970, Peter Boyle. It's almost like Taxi Driver. He plays like this hardcore racist and they kill hippies. It's just kind of nuts. But it's just weird to see Peter Boyle in that capacity. And then after that, I watched one called Hardcore, starring George C. Scott as a guy also in, I think it was 1979, that movie. His daughter goes missing. She ends up in porn. And he goes out to L.A. to find her. And he hires a sleazy private detective to find her, and it's played by Peter Boyle. So I've just recently seen these old two Peter Boyle. But Peter Boyle came out of Second City, too, by the way. And this isn't even about him. It's about his TV wife. So let's get back to Doris Roberts. She was born in St. Louis, but raised in the Bronx. So props. Most famous for Remington Steele and Everybody Loves Raymond. She originally had the Rue McClanahan role in Maude. So Maude was like, half the shows in the 70s were spinoffs of All in the Family. So you had All in the Family, right? And then spinoff of that was The Jeffersons. A spun-off of All in the Family was also Good Times, Maude, some other shows. I can't remember them all. But anyway, Maude was a spinoff. Rue McClanahan was in that show with Bea Arthur. Anyway, Doris Roberts got replaced. Rue McClanahan got thrown in there. Rue McClanahan and Bea Arthur will work together again in The Golden Girls. That's probably – I made that far more complicated than I needed it to be. I'm sure it won't even give
I just kept thinking, when is Golden Girls going to come out here? That's all I could think of when I heard these names.
Well, it's funny, they all work together a lot. So Rue McClanahan and Bea Arthur worked together on Maude, but also there was a show I used to watch that came out of the Carol Burnett show called Mama's Family, and that had Betty White and Rue McClanahan. So Betty White and Rue McClanahan worked together, Bea Arthur and Rue McClanahan worked together, and they all got together into the Golden Girls. Anyway, we don't need to talk about that. Let's look at her credits. So 162 acting credits. Her first one, a 1951 episode of Starlight Theater. Her final, a 2018 short film called ZZ and Honey Boy. Like most actors of this generation and like most ones we've already talked about, she starred in television. She did a lot of that. She did all the 1950s stuff that you do. All her 50s credits are TV. In the 60s, she mixed in movies with 1961 Something Wild, which we'll come back later. She did Naked City, that movie. That'll come back later. She did The Defenders, which you've already talked about, Barefoot in the Park, The Heartbreak Kid. Then she did The Taking of Pelham 123. This is a really cool 70s movie. It takes place in the Bronx. So it's about a hijacked subway car in the Bronx. It starred Walter Matthau, Hector Elizondo. Jerry Stiller was in it. It's Ben Stiller's dad. Later on, he was famous for being in Seinfeld and then The King of Queens. But they remade it with John Travolta, and it sucked. Boy, they messed it up. But that was a really cool movie, The Taking of Pelham 123. She goes on to do the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Beretta, Mary Hartman, All in the Family, Rhoda. I made a note to tell my Valerie Harper story. So I met Valerie Harper and I spent some time with her. It's a really cool story. However, I cat's out of the bag. I've already recorded my episode from like 2 weeks from now. So I just want to get them all recorded. And I tell the damn Valerie Harper story in that one. So I'm like, shit. So I can't even tell my Valerie Harper story, but I did meet her after a show at Second City once. And she told me how great I was. And my mind was blown because I didn't know she was even there. And now next thing I'm face to face with Valerie Harper. And then there was a reason she was there and it all started to make sense. But anyway.
You know what? You are great.
I'm sorry?
You know what? You are great.
It's lucky. I got lucky. So what happened was when you're second scene, when you go to the conservatory, you eventually become you're in a class. And eventually that class becomes like an ensemble, right? And you write all this material for a sketch show. And so we wrote all this material for a sketch show that's going to be on like, and that's like your graduation. It airs, you do a live show every Friday night for like a month or two, right? So what happens is you have all these sketches and you have to kind of fight and argue over which ones are going to get in. Well, I was also going to be starring in a show that aired. I was also going to be starring in a Saturday night show. So I didn't care about the Friday night show. So I didn't want to be in that uncomfortable thing of like pushing my own stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's like, look, man, you guys do whatever you want because I'm already going to be in another show on Saturday. That's a killer show. I'm kind of the star of that one. So anyway, I had a bit of an ego, right? So I didn't fight. But what was great about that, what happened was our show was really popular. Our Friday show was really popular. And they asked us to come back and do a second one. So the idea was, let's take all this stuff we didn't use in the first one and use it in this new one. Well, since I didn't fight to have any of my stuff in the first one, all my stuff is in the second one. So the second one was basically my show. I was like, I was in every sketch. I was like the lead in every sketch. I was the funniest one in every sketch by accident, but only because I didn't fight for my stuff in the first time. And a guy in my cast, I didn't know this. I knew her, but his girlfriend was Bradley Harper's daughter. And she was always around. I didn't like her. I didn't even tell her in the pie. I thought she was a pain in the ass. I did not care for her at all. And she was always around. She's like the Yoko Ono of our group. I was like, get out of here. We're working. Why is your girlfriend always hanging out with us? And but that was Bradley Harper's adopted daughter. I had no clue. So when I did the show, you come out and you get your ass kissed for like 20 minutes. You're in the lobby of the theater. And everyone tells you how great you are. And that's like the best part of it. This lady taps me on the shoulder. And I turn around and I'm face to face with her. And she's talking a mile a minute at me. And my brain is spinning. I'm like, is that Rhoda? Is this fucking Rhoda talking to me right now? And sure as hell it was. And she's going on, I'm great and this and that. And she walks away. And I looked over at my director who was over there. And I was like, was that Rhoda? And he was like beaming. He's like, is that cool? I was like, yeah, it is. It's just, I wish I had known. Like, I just, anyway. So that's my Rhoda story. Let's get back to Doris Roberts. It's not about me. I go all day. So her big breakthrough, like as far as people knowing her, is Remington Steele. That was in 1982. It gave her steady work. She had 72 episodes of that show. That show starred Pierce Brosnan, so it kind of made him a household name too. It was a good show. It was a typical 80s show. It was pre James Bond for Pierce Brosnan. He played him and Stephanie Zimbalist, like were heading up a private detective agency. She was a legit private detective. He was a former thief posing as a private detective, but he's British and charming and handsome. And she was like the third lead, Doris Roberts. She was like the kind of the assistant. Anyway, so she keeps working on that hit show until she lands Everybody Loves Raymond, which was another monster show. And even that, she never stopped, because after that, she did Grandma's Boy, Law and Order, Grey's Anatomy. She did The Middle, which was a reunion for her and Patricia Heaton, on and on and on. So let's look at some fun stuff on her. Now, I know I wasn't going to make fun of things. My intent was not to make fun of anything. But I found something. I'm going to make fun of it, man. So let's take a quick gander here. I promise I'll let you talk here in a little bit.
I got nothing for this.
All right. So she did a movie in 1970 called The Honeymoon Killers. I'll read you the synopsis. An obese, embittered nurse doesn't mind if her toupee-wearing boyfriend romances and fleeces. Let me start over. All right. An obese, embittered nurse doesn't mind if her toupee-wearing boyfriend romances and fleeces other women as long as he takes her along on his con jobs. So that's it. Now, the cover, and you got to look this up. It's a picture of an obese woman in maybe it's a bikini, maybe it's just her bra and panties, like this larger woman. And I made a note to read it. So, okay. You could have read it in the papers. Maybe you did. He was a cool cat, but cool. She was a fat chick, but fat. They were lovers who loved honeymoons, other people's, from which the other people never returned. The Honeymoon Killers. It's this obese woman in her bra and panties. And apparently she was
fat. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway. That's
one of the most descriptive synopses you've read as well. Yes. Why do you have to mention toupee wearing, like a fat lady and a toupee wearing boyfriend? Like, I don't know.
I don't know, man. I may have to go back and watch that one. I had to look up the woman, because who is this woman who's okay with everyone calling her fat and everything? So the fat chick, as she's called, it's not me talking of her. Her name was Shirley Stoller. This was her first credit, but she did some really impressive stuff after this. She did Clute, which I think won Jane Fonda an Oscar. Jane Fonda was a star of Clute. I'm pretty sure she won an Oscar for it. She did The Deer Hunter with Walken and John Voight and who the hell else was in that? De Niro. Oh, the guy who died. Who's that guy? He was in Godfather. He played Fredo. He was in Dog Day Afternoon. He only did 5 movies. All 5 of them were nominated for Best Picture. And he died. Jeez. I forget his name, but he played Fredo in The Godfather, you know, the dumb brother, the one that eventually Michael Corleone has to have killed. But yeah, he died young. He had like bone cancer, and he was engaged to Meryl Streep. Like they were going to get married. But he only did 5 movies, and all 5 of them were nominated for Best Film. I think it was Godfather, Godfather 2, The Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. Yeah. Anyway. But this back to this fat lady. She also did Desperately Seeking Susan, 3 o'clock High, Malcolm X, Grumpy Old Men. But it's not about her. It's about Doris Roberts. So in 1975, Doris Roberts did an episode of a sitcom called Joe and Sons. Now, I love learning about short-lived programs. Right? And this was an interesting one. So Joe and Sons, I'm going to pull up the synopsis. Oh, I was already talking about The Godfather, so it's going to come back. Okay. So working-class widower Joe Vitale is raising his teenage boys, Mark and Nick, in Hoboken, New Jersey, with help from his Aunt Florence. Proudly Italian-American, he hangs out with his pal Gus and neighbor waitress Estelle. So Joe is played by Richard Castellano. He was Clemenza in The Godfather. So the short fat guy, I know how well you know The Godfather. I'm a big Godfather, Godfather 2 guy. Clemenza is the guy who famously teaches Michael how to use the gun that they're gonna take behind the toilet. That famous scene where Michael goes to the bathroom, gets the gun. Well, that's all Clemenza's doing. He's the one who puts the gun there. He's the one who teaches Mike how to shoot it and how to drop it how to wait for the train comes, shoot the guy. Don't run with the gun. You got to drop the gun because you don't want the evidence. It's a whole thing, but that's all Clemenza, yep. And he's the star of this. And his pal Gus in this show is played by Jerry Stiller. So Jerry Stiller comes back. I really must move on. So I met the challenge. I connected all four of the in-laws. Right?
You did. Challenge, indeed.
Challenge accepted. Challenge completed. However, I got more. So I think I can do one more. I can take one step further. Doris Roberts did Studio One. She did Something Wild. She did The Defenders. She did The Doctors and the Nurses, just like William Hickey, who played Uncle Lewis.
Uncle Lewis.
And we're going to circle back on this. I'm not going to go deep on this. I can tell I'm already boring the audience here. But for the sake of time, I just wanted to move on quickly, but I want to talk briefly about him. So Uncle Lewis was played by William Hickey. He had a long career. I think I mentioned this in another podcast. I knew him also from a 1989 movie. He played Al Pacino's dad in a movie called Sea of Love. Great movie. Al Pacino, Ellen Barkin, John Goodman's in it. Anyway, so this guy played his dad. He's only 13 years older than Pacino. Get this. In Christmas Vacation, how old do you think Uncle Lewis is, by the way? If you had to ballpark it.
In the movie?
Yeah, just in general. I mean, you tell me, how old do you think that guy is?
Okay, hang on a second. Am I supposed to tell you how old I think the actor is or how old Uncle Lewis in the movie is?
The actor.
Okay, so the actor... in that movie in 19, what is that, 89? Is that when it came out?
Yeah.
I would have guessed, pre getting a weird question like this, I would have guessed he was 75.
61 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy to me.
It's nuts. Cause I mean, he looks that's older crazy. Than hell and even plays old, but he was only 61 years old. I think he's got that Wilford Brimley disease where he just always looked older.
Yeah.
Cause even in Sea of Love, which came out the same year in a different character, but he looked ancient and his character was his health was failing. Al Pacino actually had to carry him at one point. And put him down. And so he comes up as this really old guy. Same year. He's 61 years old. That's nuts. Anyway, movies where he appeared very, very old. He's only 61. Now, Aunt Bethany, we're talking about her. She was played by Mae Questel. Really interesting career. By the way, she was 19 years older than Uncle Lewis. So he was 61. Yeah, she would have been 80.
She was 80. Yeah, that makes sense.
That so, 80 and 61. Were they a couple in the movie? They're married, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. So 19-year difference. She had 416 credits, but most of them were cartoon voiceover. She was the original Betty Boop. She was Betty Boop. And she was also Olive Oil. So all her credits, hundreds and hundreds of short films, she was Betty Boop, and she was Olive Oil. Like all the original Popeyes, man. She only did a handful of actual live-action stuff, and Christmas Vacation was her final credit. So that's it. So, I mean, I try to connect them all. I didn't really get from Lewis to Aunt Bethany. But connecting them all, that's really all I had as far as doing the normal Fanacek type stuff. I want to talk. Let's just talk about the main cast. So, I mean, have you seen all the Vacation movies or no?
I've seen Vacation. It's been a while. Vegas Vacation. Where can I get some damn bait? Christmas Vacation. And I think that's it.
No, you haven't seen European Vacation?
Uh-uh.
That's a good one. That's good. I like the movie. I rank it actually as not one of the better vacation movies though. So it's a great holiday movie. It's one of my favorite holiday movies. But as far as vacation movies go, I give it kind of maybe the third best. I think the original is great. European, in order that they made them is the order of best to worst.
Yeah, original Vegas European
Vacation is for shit.
European is Big Ben Parliament, right? That's the Big Ben Parliament.
Yes, it is. Yeah. One of my gripes about this movie too, by the way, and you see this all the time. People have it on ornaments or pictures, the green station wagon, right, with the wood paneling and the big Christmas tree on top of it. But that's not how it played out. The green car is not in the movie. It doesn't come back. We don't see the green car again. How do they not have the green car in this movie?
I don't know. Well, how is Rusty younger than Audrey in this movie?
That's funny. I mean,
the continuity is not necessarily the main concern.
I just think it's an iconic thing. I think the car should have come back. So Chevy Chase is the lead, Beverly D'Angelo, Johnny Galecki. Let's talk a little bit about them. Let's start with the kids. Juliette Lewis, one of the better Audreys. She's had a killer career. I was thinking a lot about Juliette Lewis, and I don't have anything prepared, but she's not stopped working the whole time. And you know what it is? There's a quote they say about actors that if you want to work forever, be a character actor, right? If you want to be a leading person, you're only going to have a short window. She's like Alec Baldwin to me. She keeps reinventing herself. like, because she blew up with Cape Fear. So after this, Cape Fear came out, like, she was household name. I think she got an Oscar nomination for it. And she started headlining movies, right? She was, like, one of the leads in California with Brad Pitt. She was one of the leads in Natural Born Killers. So she's a leading actress. Then it starts to fall off. Now, this is a scary time for actors, right? When you're a lead actor, when you're the one putting asses in the seats, and now you're kind of a, not as bright a star, you're a falling star, there's one of two ways you can go. You can keep chasing it, which means you're doing shittier and shittier movies, or you can take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to take smaller parts in better projects. And that's what she did, and she's still going strong. Alec Baldwin, same way, man. Alec Baldwin was like a leading man in the 80s. It was Alec Baldwin's name was above the title. He was Jack Ryan, you know what I mean? And when it started to fall apart and he gained a little weight and he wasn't that guy anymore, instead of chasing it, step back, he became a character actor. I was like, holy shit. When did Alec Baldwin become a character? And now he's grown, and now he's back to being a leading man again, kind of. So yeah. I think the same thing with her. She had a hell of a career, Juliette Lewis.
We saw her, this has probably been 8 or 9 years ago, but they did a TV series of The Firm. And I think we were talking to you about this because I think I called it The Fugitive at first. It was The Firm. And it's, I can never think of the guy's last name. It's Josh, whatever his name is. He's the voice of the Home Depot commercials. But yeah, he was Mitch McDear. And she was like a sister-in-law, I think. But she was excellent in that show. And I was like, oh my God, that's Audrey, you know?
I can see that. I'm going to pull it up, but I think if you said sister-in-law in the movie that was played by Holly Hunter, and Holly Hunter got an Oscar nomination for it, so I could totally see Juliette Lewis kind of like kind of street smart, floozy-ish kind of character, or no?
Yes. Yeah. Street smart, a little off the wall, mm-hmm. but yeah.
It was Josh Lucas, by the way.
Josh Lucas. There you go. Josh Lucas. Apologies. He's all the voices whenever they're talking about all the things you can find at Home Depot on Home Depot commercials. Uh-huh. He's narrating them.
How the hell did you know that? Out of curiosity.
When you hear the voice, I mean, we watched the show and it was like a mini series, like a 13 part or something. It was really pretty good. Best I can remember. But when you hear that voice all the time and he's your main character on a show that you're watching and then you hear him in a commercial, I'm like, that's Mitch McDear. That's Josh Lucas.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that there was a show, but it was a great movie. You know, I looked it up. Yeah, she played the same role that Holly Hunter played, and Holly Hunter got an Oscar nomination for it. It's a great character. Yeah, she's had a killer career, and she still goes strong. I mean, she'll pop up in dramas. She pops up in comedies. I mean, she's still one of my favorite parts of Old School. You know, I love her in Old School.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I was preparing this, I was like, what am I going to say about her? And just a long career, and it's by making smart decisions. She never chased it. It's like, you know what I mean? Once you don't put asses in seats, if you keep – That's how Nicolas Cage ended up, you know, doing video on demand movies, just like Bruce Willis, man. If you keep chasing that leading man thing, that's not good. Let's talk about her brother, Johnny Galecki. This kid's been working forever. Were you a Roseanne guy? Did you ever watch Roseanne?
Yep. I was in on Roseanne. Yep. I remember him there. And of course, Big Bang Theory, obviously more recently, but yeah.
Yeah. He strikes me as a guy who really knows himself well. Cause you know, That's like 20 years of steady work, right? I mean, almost. I mean, he did probably 4 or 5 years of Roseanne, and then I think Big Bang was like 11 years or something, or 10 or 11 years. That's a lot of steady work. And in between, he did some good movies. I remember him in a movie that a Ben Affleck movie called Bounce with Gwyneth Paltrow. I don't think it's regarded as a good movie. I liked it, but he had a good role in that too. But even in all those years of success with Big Bang Theory, you never saw the movie, like the Johnny Galecki movies, right? It wasn't like, okay, the show's on the hiatus. Let me go. I think he just kind of has a really firm grasp of who he is as an actor. And he's one of those guys who quietly has worked like his whole life, man. Like, well done. You know?
Yeah, he's done very well.
And again, I thought he was good in the movie. Beverly D'Angelo has been around forever, man. I'm a big Beverly D'Angelo guy. When I was a kid, so I think I've mentioned this in one of the episodes earlier. She was in a movie called Hair. So there was a play called Hair about hippies, right? And it was a movie. And so I was working at a video store, and I'd heard some of the music, and I was like, let me rent this movie. So I went through this weird phase where I was like really obsessed with the movie. Not obsessed, but I was just kind of popping on and watching a lot. And I had no idea, but there's like this big nude scene in the middle of the movie. Like they're at Central Park nude, and I mean, boom, there she is, just nude. And I was like, holy shit, it's Beverly D'Angelo naked. Because I forgot she got naked in Vacation too. But she was singing in that. So she's like a trained singer, Beverly D'Angelo.
Huh.
Yeah, she was married to Al Pacino for a long time, has twins with Al Pacino. Just interesting career, man. But she's been around forever too. But she's always been – she never quite got there. Like I don't feel like she was ever – she's always been B-level, Beverly D'Angelo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of anything that she's done outside of these movies really, besides Hair, which I kind of stumbled across.
Yeah.
But she famously had an affair with Scott Baio back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah, Scott Baio, man. I don't know. He's one of those guys who's laid a lot of pipe. He's famous.
He's done a lot of work for the human race.
Yeah, Scott Baio is kind of a legend. I think he's kind of a creep, but yeah, that she's one of them. And that takes us to Chevy Chase, man. I don't know about old Chevy Chase. I mean, great. I mean, this is a party's born to play. But I mean, and in my next episode talks a lot about Chevy Chase because I'm doing a Foul Play, which is a movie that became a TV show. And that was the movie that's supposed to launch him. So you can't overestimate enough how famous Chevy Chase was at SNL. So he was only on for one season. People think he was like part of the original cast. He was, but only 1 year. He quit after 1 year. And he was the original host of Weekend Update. And he always claimed he was famous because he said his name a lot. Because his, you know, they all have a catchphrase. Well, his was, "I'm Chevy Chase and you're not." By repeating it constantly, he feels like he got drilled. But he was instantly the breakout star. So he's on the cover of all the magazines, newspaper articles, all this stuff. Really pissed off the rest of the cast. And Belushi was beside himself. Like, because going in prior to that, Belushi was the big guy. Second City was Belushi. National Lampoon's was Belushi. Because they did a Broadway show called Lemmings that both Chevy Chase and he were in prior to SNL. And then when they got SNL, Chevy Chase gets launched. So he quits after 1 year. He's a big, I mean, and if he does one hit movie, just one, that he would be the most popular, I mean, the most famous man in Hollywood. And it just didn't quite hit. And he was there and he did Foul Play and it was a good movie, but it didn't quite launch. It was actually better for Goldie Hawn. I mean, Goldie Hawn, even bigger star. And so, yeah, he just kind of fell off. So this was a great role for him. I mean, he did these movies so well. I mean, he's born to play it, but you have no idea how close he was to being like the guy. Like the actor in Hollywood. Yeah. And he just didn't quite get there. And then his just behavior really kind of derailed him a bit. So.
Yeah. Well, I more recently remember him jumping into the show Community. I don't know if you watched Community at all with Joel McHale. And then it had Danny Glover's son and a bunch of other, it's a bunch of kids in a community.
That's not
college.
Danny Glover's son.
Yeah.
Donald Glover's not Danny Glover's son. Is he really?
Yeah.
Get out.
Childish Gambino?
Yeah, I knew he's Childish Gambino. I had no idea he was related to Danny Glover. Is that correct?
Uh-oh, I'm about to get fact-checked.
That just blows my... Danny Glover's son. I got to look this up.
Oh, man. I hope that's right.
I think you might be right. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty certain.
Get out of town. I had no, I mean, I obviously both named Glover. I just had no clue. How did I not know that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So he's really funny, by the way. Donald Glover's hilarious. But the show was really funny at the time.
You never
time.
Hear like, bad thing about right, that show ever. Yeah.
So it was right when Joel McHale was doing like, there was like a, some like TMZ type show that he was doing. It was a satirical, comedic kind of thing. And it was little bits. And he was pretty funny at the time. He was kind of like rising in popularity. And so he does this show with this cast. Chevy Chase comes in for a couple of seasons as one of the characters, and he's like an old man, and there's all the jokes on that. But he was pretty funny in that, but also interestingly, like kind of an old racist, an old curmudgeon-y type character, which may be pretty similar to his actual personality.
Right.
But it was, I don't know, it's the last time I saw him. And but that was in the 2010s, you know, that was... 2015, yeah. 2018 range.
That was a really popular show. Yeah, and had great cast because I mean, I'm not seeing the show, but I mean, obviously Alison Brie was in it, and she's gone on to a lot of stuff. And the girl, the other girl, Gillian. It's not Gillian. You think it's Gillian? It's Gillian something.
Gillian Jacobs or something. Yeah.
I think I was talking about this. She's in a show that I love called Love on Netflix.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Judd Apatow. It only lasted 3 seasons. It's phenomenal. I think it was only supposed to be 3 seasons because it clearly had a conclusion. Great show if you ever get a chance. But that didn't end well for Chevy Chase. So I know a little bit about that only because Joel McHale was he did Howard Stern, and I heard the whole thing. So they fired Chevy Chase off that show. He got canned for his behavior. Yep. And Joel McHale hated him. And he said it got pretty almost close to physical. But what's funny about that is they made a movie. I can't remember what it's called. A Futile and Stupid Gesture, I think is what it's called. But it's about National Lampoon. Joel McHale plays Chevy Chase in it. And
really,
they're similar heights, but because it was about National Lampoons, and again, they had a lot of stuff going on even before SNL came out of Harvard. Yeah. They had a Broadway show that Gilda Radner was in, Belushi was in, Chevy Chase was in, So they did or a movie about it. And yeah, he plays Chevy Chase, partly because it's a good role for him, but it's certainly a fuck you as well. Because he now gets to get his revenge by playing Chevy Chase as an asshole. So that was pretty cool.
That's pretty spectacular.
Yeah. So, I mean, all right. So I was going to ask you where you rank this, but I we already talked about that. I ranked this movie the third of all the vacation movies, but I mean, it's one of my favorite holiday movies. The Vegas one sucks. I was thinking about this. I made some notes too. But if they did another vacation movie, should it be? Like, I mean, they've done Vegas, they've done Europe, they've done cross country, and then they did a stay at home Christmas one. I was thinking, like, we could bring back Wally World, right? Bring the grandkids. I was thinking Spring Break might be interesting. I was also thinking maybe Super Bowl, like Clark Griswold and family go to the Super Bowl. I don't know. I'd like to see another vacation movie. Like, I want them
because you want to see the Bears in the Super Bowl so bad again. You're willing it to happen in a movie.
That could be it. That is it. That has to be it. The Bears go to the Super Bowl, and he's traveling, and he wants it to be perfect. He's taking the kids. I don't know. I feel like, because Vegas sucked, that one's awful.
You could also do you know, like companies will do like a company trip for like executives or whatever, you know, you could keep something together with the cereal varnish chemical company or whatever that he worked for. And I'm not sure Frank Shirley would come back or if he's even still alive.
Maybe
they could do something like that. It'd be like a trip, like a work trip kind of thing.
What if his company has a suite at the Super Bowl?
And
he wins. Like he wins. He gets to go there and bring the family, is because he did another thing that keeps cookies good for 20 years.
That's right.
I forgot about that. But yeah, I think they should do another one. I'd like to see another one of these movies. I also was wondering if they should do a sequel to Christmas Vacation, another stay at home Christmas. The problem we have here too is I mean I don't think you get Cousin Eddie back. I think he's down the crazy train now.
Well, here's the thing. Although they changed characters like every time they did the movie, you could get Johnny Galecki to do Russ, and he and Audrey could be hosting, and like Chevy could be coming in as one of the grandparents, you know.
Ah,
it'd be like the next generation kind of thing.
I like
where Chevy is now like Clark Senior.
Yeah.
And you know, Russ is like the Clark, basically.
Sure.
I think that
could work. You know, too bad Randy Quaid. I mean, I don't know if you know the saga of Randy Quaid, but I don't think there's any coming back for him. Last I heard, he ran off to Canada and he was wanted by the cops, but he claimed that there were Hollywood hitmen, literally, after he and his wife. Like, I think he is, and he owes a lot of people money. I don't know what the hell happened to him, but he's clearly batshit. So I don't think we get him back, man. I think he's
maybe Dennis Quaid would do it. Maybe Dennis Quaid. You give him the right kind of makeup, maybe he could do it.
Or just do a deep fake. Just get
or a deep fake. Yeah. Screw it. We don't even need that. There are enough impressionists right now, too. We don't even need that.
Right. But I want another vacation movie, whether it's another trip. I like the Super Bowl idea, and I like tying it into work. It could be a work function. But I also think there's room for a sequel to Christmas Vacation. I'd like to see that again.
Yeah.
But that is all. And I have one thing I have to propose. We should at some point get a night, crack open a few beers, and we push through on the Cousin Eddie's tropical vacation movie, whatever it is. Christmas. I only gave it 10-20 minutes chance, and we should just push through the whole thing. Maybe there's like nuggets of gold. Maybe there's nuggets of gold in there, you know?
There's got to be something. I mean, there's got to be something. There will be a couple of good lines at least.
Something. We should do that. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you doing this. This was my holiday Santa check episode going in on that Christmas Vacation. Any last plugs? You want to talk about your podcast a little bit?
I don't. Check it out where you can get your podcasts. It's pretty spectacular. I've got to check my fantasy lineup here because the games are kicking off here in a few minutes.
They are. I'm on top, and I'm in a league with you. And it's playoff time. I'm not loving my matchup this week. I'm a little on edge. So,
well, I'm wishing you the best of luck this week and not beyond. And
well, it's a wild card based shoe. If I win this week, I'm not playing you. I think the only way you and I can play is if I go
in
all
the championship.
Way, right? Yeah.
Oh man, that would be fun.
So I may see you in the Super Bowl. But hey, man, you've been a great guest. I appreciate you doing this, and we will do it again soon. So stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Santa Check. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed. That was Christmas Vacation. I want to thank my guest Chaz. He did a great job as always. I rambled on that one, but I'm okay with it. Sincerely, though, from my family to yours, I hope all you listeners have a great holiday season, safe and sound with your families. Hope you enjoy time together. Enjoy the holidays. If you are interested, you can find me on Twitter at Fanacek Podcast. You can email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email me and wish me some holiday well wishes, and I'll send you a sticker. How about that? What else can you find me? Oh, I'm on Facebook, Real Fanacek. And for my guest, always go check out Fold in the Cheese. It's a great fantasy football podcast. I went to the Super Bowl last season. I lost. I'm in the playoffs this season, so I am a frequent listener, and I can attest to its goodness. But again, enjoy the holidays, and I will see you after the holidays. So always stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.